comparing or trying to like shoehorn Kant's critique of pure reason into TikTok is its linearity without sequentiality. When you're on TikTok, you're just scrolling or you're just swiping and going from video to video. It's one after the other, but there's no inherent logic except for what an algorithm kind of lines up for you. So I think that's interesting. I also think it's good that you brought up at the beginning the medium of the light bulb, the electric light, to discuss the medium as or is the message. Because McLuhan actually, well, first of all, it's just a very, it's a kind of jarring example. We don't tend to think of electric light bulbs as mediums. We think of paintings or other forms of art as mediums. But the electric light bulb is, for McLuhan, a prime example of a piece of media. I'm quoting from Understanding Media. The electric light is pure information. It is a medium without a message, as it were, unless it is used to spell out some verbal ad or name. Whether the light is being used for brain surgery or night baseball, it is a matter of indifference. It could be argued that these activities are in some way the content of the electric light, since they could not exist without the electric light. This fact merely underlines the point that the medium is the message, because it is the medium that shapes and controls the scale and form of human association and action. And I think it's that last bit that is central to this idea of the medium as the message or is the message, that you have a kind of container that conditions what can occur within it. Light is the kind of universal medium because you can't really do anything in darkness. Anything you're going to do, you can do in light. So more light, more activity. Now overnight surgeries are a thing. But that it controls and forms human action and association. You brought up the way that the wheel kind of modifies the leg. It modifies it by taking the effort of having to kind of bear loads. We can carry more. Like if we think of like a wheelbarrow situation, we can carry more than our bodies can carry now. That extends our legs in a way. It modifies human action in that way.
Something that really came to my mind as we were discussing, I got a little shiver, honestly, as you read that quote and we're talking, because I'm like, I personally find this stuff so interesting. But one of the reasons I find it so interesting is because this kind of philosophy, this kind of investigation, looks at things that are so obvious. And that's the thing about media and mediums in particular, but especially we think about media in our own time. I think about people like Kierkegaard and Heidegger, existential and phenomenologists from 19th, early 20th century, who spoke at some length about how some of the most important philosophy is done about things that are so banal and obvious because we skip over them. We are so immersed in their world, in what's conditioned to them, that we never take the time to really think about what are the implications? How is this happening? As you point out with the light bulb, like you take a step back, like not only did that, like what did that technology, like, you know, the light, oh, it creates light. That's obvious. That's like good. We can like see more because like we can't see in the dark. Oh yeah. That's all we really have to say. But really it's like, no, like everything that we do now, like our whole world was completely altered by the light bulb. And we're now so immersed in that technology, it's so ubiquitous, it's so standard, we don't even think about the fact that it still constitutes a fundamental structure. And as we, that's one of the weird, I think the weird things about being kind of all of us, for our listeners, we're all in our mid to later 20s, as I believe. I sometimes think it's a kind of weird to be this sort of millennial individual, whatever, because we sit at the precipice of a new shift, right? Obviously the internet shift, but I think particularly the smartphone app, social media shift. And that's been something that's been happening for almost two decades now, but we've grown up through it. And we've kind of seen that change happen. And it the way things are now weren't always the way they are. They were, basically. And that has to do with the media. Like, the media is, and I don't mean, when I say media for listeners, I don't mean like big media, like CNN, see, but literally like the technology itself has a radical implications for how this, how our world lives are structured, and particularly like how we understand ourselves, which I think leads us to our second point. So the medium's message is focused really a lot on how the medium itself functions. But the next point that I wanted to bring up from McLuhan was, we shape our tools and therefore they shape us. And this is really relating to the medium or the media and its relations to us, and that reflection and how we sort of shift. So as McLuhan, I've got a quote from McLuhan here, machines altered our relations to one another and to ourselves. So really, this particular point, even more so than the medium is the message, is really to highlight the shift in existential agency that's going on. Tools of media become vehicles for effectively self-shaping. We made them so that they can change who we are and what we can do, but because of this, what becomes possible for us is conditioned by them. So really to point out, well, you guys were already speaking, we were already hinting at it, but the light bulb one is great. You know, it's possible to be a brain surgeon working at any time of the day, on, you know, to have complete control of the levels of light in a room. That's an accessible, realistic, accepted, well understood, and often very desired type of person to be, right? To have that kind of identity effectively. There aren't that many pastoral, seasoned-based peasants anymore. Or farmers. Like, that's not really a thing. Sure, like, you could say, okay, there are some very, very impoverished or rural areas, but that's simply a reflection of the fact that, like, the technology is not readily universal or accessible in those places. And those places are shrinking and shrinking every day, at least in the West and most of the developed world and all that kind of stuff, you might say. Like, that sort of way of being, for lack of a better way of saying it, that kind of identity, that kind of self-understanding, and those associated communities, like, we created new tools, in this case, electric light bulb, and those tools came back around and changed everything about us and still do. And the thing is in their creation, we don't have to have any sort of plan or idea. We generally don't, right? To think more in more modern terms, like, you know, Mark Zuckerberg creating Facebook or the guy that created MySpace, we can even go deeper. It's not really realistic, I would say, to think that he had a full understanding of what the implications of this thing would be. Facebook started as like a little like networking group for just Harvard University. Like, that's what it was. And the technology basically got created and they effectively grow their own legs and they run and they, you know, and they run with us. They take us with them. I got a little bit more. Think about how social media and the notion of an online presence has turned into a kind of what we might call profilicity. This is where a genuine component of who we are is this mirrored self in the online world, a component of self and the medium of self-expression that often trumps the real world self. So this is a radical shift in terms of human selfhood and self-understanding. So just as a note, the term profilicity comes from it's a more modern term in terms of media theory, but basically you have three general stages of self-understanding and social construction. We've got, the second one is, for listeners, having a moment here. The second one is authenticity, but the first one is not, we're going to call it commitment. I'm going to call it commitment for now, but that's not the usual term. And if it comes to me, I'll let you know. But basically, through the Middle Ages, particularly through the early modern period, you were born into the world and who you understood yourself to be was based upon a fundamental commitment with your social standing and social place in the world. Basically, I'm, say, born a noble, or I'm born a peasant, or I'm born into a craftsman world, whatever, social standing. And the way that I understand myself and basically plant my feet in the world and have a good self-conception is to take up, you know, that challenge of being a good cobbler, of being a good farmer, of being a good and effective lord. And that's how I understand myself. In the 19th century, 18th, and particularly the 19th century, we see a shift to, and then into the 20th, we see a shift into what was often termed authenticity. This is where, to put it in the simplest terms, you recognize all that previous stuff we were talking about as social conventions and understand yourself to be a kind of free individual who has to make decisions that often can and will transcend those former social structures. Now, I think a lot of times we still think in authentic terms, but really I think with modern media technology, what we see again is the media coming back around. We've created this thing. It's now shaping us. And really how we understand ourselves, how our identity is online presence, our online profile, how we don't just show ourselves to the people that we interact with in our day-to-day. In fact, that might be less important, but who we are over Facebook, over Instagram, over TikTok, over various published types of media, whatever it might be, the options are very, very varied. But the point is that there's, you know, the real Hale sitting here talking about whatever, but just as important, if not more so, in terms of dictating who I am, and in particular how I understand myself, is how does the world at large, i.e. the online world, see and understand me? And how do I curate that effectively? And so I think that's a good example of how, you know, this process of the media, you know, we shaping a media and the media coming back and shaping us, it really works. It's really a change in what you might call identity technology, which is really a change in the mode in which we produce ourselves. This is really revealing of contingency of human identity. I think McLuhan was kind of clear in believing that identity is not something essential, but is determined really more by the tools which we use to make it.
There has been an explosion of interest in artificial intelligence research recently, especially with everyone's favorite new chatbot, ChatGPT, and all of the fun stuff that comes up with that. And I have to think that it's really strange. You have to think back to like a year ago, before some of these technologies existed, to think about how strange it actually is that you can now like type what you want into a search box and a computer will write you a program or plan you a menu or write you poetry or a short story. Like, that type of thing is really strange. It's not something that I think we really anticipated a lot of people using. There have been like, I mean, I remember when I was in school, I actually did a presentation on chatbot technology, and like, it's been around for like 40 years. It started with human beings like typing all of the answers in for a very set amount of responses. And then, you know, it changed a little bit here. It changed a little bit there. It adapted over time. But it's really weird to think that something that essentially was created to streamline customer service or increase access to information is now essentially people's go-to friend or go-to helper in their lives for so many people today.
There was a big row recently about AI-created art. And some of this art is actually like pretty good. How does this change us though, right? Like, not just change art. Art has always kind of had, thinking back to Benjamin, this sort of spiritual component. Brandon might remember the actual term that he uses, but there's a kind of reverence for art. Art has a sort of special, it exists on a, effectively a higher plane.
He calls it an aura.
Aura, that's the word I was looking for. Now, suddenly if computers or if AI, more specifically, can create art, you know, that's as good or perhaps in many circumstances better than the, you know, these particular spiritual individual does, then what does that do to art as a human outlet, a human practice? In particular, how does it then come back and change how artists, people previously termed artists, understand themselves? Is that kind of aura loss? Is that sort of spiritual sense loss? Oh, now it's just a thing that AI can do too. Does that, and again, that's coming back to that, it's changing our associations with our, with each other, and especially ourselves, right? What kind of massive effect does something like that, a technological shift in medium, have on a really, really fundamental component of human society and personal understanding? Let's talk about the last concept, and perhaps the weirdest. And this is what McLuhan termed the rear view mirror. And I've got a few quotes from McLuhan here to enter us into this, the rear view mirror. McLuhan said, "We look at the present through a rear view mirror. We march backwards into the future." And he also said, "What people see in the new is always the old thing, the rear view mirror. The future of the future is the present." And finally, he said, "Suburbia lives imaginatively in Bonanza Land." We find it uncomfortable for our modern media to portray accurately themselves and the societies which are in fact shaped by that media. To talk specifically about something that McLuhan thought about in terms of this concept, in 1960s suburbia, the most popular TV shows were ones like the campy Western Bonanza. And that's why McLuhan said suburbia lives imaginatively in Bonanza Land, which displayed a far more comfortable, gratifying world, at least in a fictional media sense, than the one that was actually lived by the users of the television technology at that time. People find comfort in displaying images of old technologies, but only through the new technologies. Perhaps more importantly, people find solace in fictions displaying the old identity technologies. So again, thinking about things like commitment and authenticity. These are the old, as he often called them, identity cards, is kind of a similar concept he had. And McLuhan said, "These are old identity cards and that no longer work." He also said, "In the new electric world where everybody is involved in everybody, where everybody is involved in complex processes that are going on in the total environment, the old identity cards that used to constitute private identity, the old means of figuring out who I am, will not work. Really, the truth is that the old marks of distinguishing identity, occupation, nationality, age, these no longer serve in any longer as clear markers of distinguishing private identity. Media does not portray itself very well." I actually have two modern examples to bring this up. So I thought about two television shows that are very modern and very popular that purport to display the modern world, but actually display something else. So the first show I thought about was the very popular sitcom mockumentary Modern Family. So it's supposed to be a modern American sitcom, but really displays more of an idealized 1980s sitcom world, while conveniently ignoring or sidelining the realities of the digital age of family, the family, work world, and society. If you watch Modern Family, it comes across like a 1980s sitcom when you really take a step back, even though it's supposed to be a mockumentary and even though it's supposed to be basically based in the 2010s. The family spends a lot of time together. They go on lots of like shenanigans. It's basically all in person. Their family itself is very connected. Not to say that it doesn't exist, but what you don't see is, you know, the kids spending 6 hours on their iPads after school, right? You don't see Hugh Duffy, or I think that's the dad's name, if I'm getting it correctly. Maybe I'm not. It doesn't really matter. You know, I believe he's a realtor. You don't see him on his computer working all day long, right? And taking Zoom calls and, you know, sending text messages and blah, blah, blah. Spending, like, how people actually spend their time and use modern technology, even though this show is displayed and often through that modern technology, it would be weird and uncomfortable to actually see a realistic depiction of the functions of the media occurring. In the same way that McLuhan talked about specifically with Bonanza Land, if anyone's watched Bonanza, I've seen parts of it, it's a really campy Western about people figuring out who they are and living the hard life and being out, you know, out on the plains and all this kind of stuff, really like classic old school Western stuff that was really popular at the time. Most of the people that watched that lived in ticky-tacky suburbia, right? And drove cars to work in the new urban suburban world and worked in office jobs and all that kind of stuff and lived in a world and a life that was completely different from what was being displayed and what was popular on television. And in that sense, that's that rearview mirror that McLuhan's talking about, that media doesn't like to display itself. It doesn't like to look forward. It likes to display what is backwards through what is forwards. And I'm going to use one more example that I thought was kind of interesting of a TV show. And that is, there was a show called Mr. Robot for a while. It's a show that is ostensibly about a modern top-level hacker, but really is more like a 20th century espionage show, with underdog revolutionaries working the shadows against a giant crypto fascist corporation. So again, here's a show that's actually about technology, like ostensibly, right? Hackers and all this kind of stuff. But again, what does it actually show? Are there episodes where it's like a guy sitting at a computer typing code for like an hour? You know, no, like there might be like very short clips of that, but really it's, you know, it's the drama. It's the like breaking into things and the secret codes and, you know, when people bust into their underground hideout and there's gunfights and they're flying all over the place. And it's like kind of old school espionage, you know, all this kind of stuff that again, you like this by kind of using new technologies as a case, really reflecting upon old tropes and old worlds and past ideas and conventions, and in particular, past conceptions of personal identity, right? Again, oftentimes, in particular, our modern media really likes to talk about and be concerned with authenticity and has nothing to say about the profilicity, nothing to say about the profile created self that technology actually is the medium or the conduit for. Brandon, I see you shaking your head. Do you have anything you want to add to that?
I just wanted to, yeah, this is it's a difficult kind of core concept to wrap your head around, but I do think it is important. I think you brought it up a little bit when you were discussing Facebook, just, you know, it was just this thing for Harvard students, but the past, or we drive backwards into the past, we don't really, or through a rear view mirror, I think part of that can be that we don't understand a medium. We just kind of have to put it out there in the ecology of technology and see what it does to our form of life. But I also wanted to think a little bit about this because it's one of the core ideas that is actually its own metaphor. So you think about driving and you're looking at your rear view mirror, you're still getting a view of the road, but you think about what driving actually is like. You're looking through a windshield. You're not looking at the car. You're not looking at the piece of medium that you are operating. The world kind of just operates transparently. I think it kind of also illuminates a little bit of why, if you've read any Heidegger, you usually encounter Heidegger's hammer that just disappears for some reason. This maybe, if you think about it, kind of helps you to understand why that might be. You kind of just become absorbed in that technology. And it, again, let's go back to the light bulb. It is a pure or sort of pure medium. Its content is just whatever it lights up. It always hides behind the content. You're always absorbed in it. I'm thinking a little bit about Heraclitus with nature loves to hide the nature of a thing here. This just seems to be the nature of mediums, that they are the things upon which content find themselves situated. But I think it is interesting that McLuhan says that it's a rear view mirror. We're not driving the car and looking forward. In terms of media going through time, we're looking backwards, as you're talking about. There's a quote from Brian Eno, who is a famous ambient musician. He says, "Whatever you now find weird, ugly, uncomfortable, and nasty about a new medium will surely become its signature. CD distortion, the jitteriness of digital video, the crap sound of 8-bit, all of these will be cherished and emulated as soon as they can be avoided. And I mean, isn't that what's happening now with music? There was this big explosion of vaporwave, which kind of initiated this movement into like lo-fi music. There's always this reappropriation of the old medium as the content of new medium when music technologies become, I guess, commercially accessible enough to produce this stuff. That old sound gets reappropriated into producing, you know, beats and whatnot.
The new media always co-opt as their content what was, you know, the general functionalities or quirks of what came before. It's kind of strange. They only display themselves in their use, but new media also, by their very use, effectively hide what they really are until they're obsolete in some kind of way. As Heidegger before, we talked about in other shows as well, it's only when they break or when something comes to replace them that we can take a step back and say, yeah, the hammer was that thing that I used to hit nails with. But none of that's really obvious until after it's effectively gone. But I really enjoyed today's discussion. Thanks to both of you. And, you know, we hope you enjoyed it well as well. And this has been the Canadian Philosophy Show, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Find archived recordings of the Canadian Philosophy Show on mixcloud.com/thecanadianphilosophyshow and tcps.podbean.com.